Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk, episode number 71. Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Gabe Jones. This is a show that's by the fans, for the fans. Just like all of you, I am a fan of Christian music. And today we've got a great show for you. John Mark McMillan is on the show. One of my favorite songwriters. He has been around for probably about 15 years or so, at least as a signed artist. And he has put out such great music in that time span. We're going to be talking to him today about a lot of the music that he's released over the years, including Mercury and Lightning, which just released a year ago this past weekend. I actually spoke with them Saturday night, which was a year ago to the day that that album was released. September 1st, 2017 was when it was released. And we talk a lot about that record. We talk a lot about the 10th anniversary of The Medicine, which came out September 9th, 2008. And he just released a 10th anniversary commemorative edition record to celebrate the 10th anniversary of The Medicine, and we talk a lot about that. Of course, a lot of you know John Mark McMillan as the guy who wrote How He Loves, and we definitely talk about that as well. We talk about some of his future plans, and we'll get more into that a little bit later. Before we head into the interview, we need to talk about our Patreon page. Hey guys, unfortunately, when it comes to making podcasts, it does cost a little bit of money to make these things because, you know, for instance, if you want a place to live, you have to pay somebody some money to rent. Or even if you have a mortgage, you have to pay a house payment so you can live there. Just like that line of thinking, we have to pay somebody to host the podcast online so that we can bring this audio magic to your ears a couple times a month, and we do that with your help, and we thank you for those who have already helped, especially people like Leslie Thomas, who've just helped over the years, and it's just been incredible. Garrett Gottfried has also helped, and we just greatly thank you guys for helping over the years. But if you go to patreon.com/decentchristiantalk, you can join our team for as low as $1 a month. There's other levels that you can join as well. There's a $5 a month club where you can get a shout out at the end of each podcast. And I think there's even a $10 a month club. For those that join, you get exclusive bonus episodes. Some of the great round table discussions that we have, basically kind of wrapping up the interview parts. We kind of go more in depth with the interview. We kind of dissect those a little bit more, and they're more in-depth episodes. They're exclusively for those that pledge $10 a month. But you don't have to do that. You can do a $1 a month pledge if that's all you can afford. We greatly appreciate it. We're getting near the end of the year already, and we'd like to get our podcast fully funded, and you can help us do that. Once again, at that patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. We would love to have you on our team, and we hope that you consider that as the year comes to a close. It's hard to believe Labor Day has come and gone, but you know, the year's going to be wrapping up. Christmas items will be in the stores. Football has kicked off. College football has kicked off. NFL football will be kicking off this coming weekend. It's hard to believe. Hockey starts a month from today that I'm recording this. That's really exciting for me. But yeah, it's just so exciting. The leaves will be turning. It's probably my favorite time of year. I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready for some cooler weather. But hey, enough about that. We're going to dive right into the interview with John Mark McMillan. It's a great conversation. It's one of our longer interviews that we've ever done. So make sure you check that out. If it's too long for you, you can always hit pause and come back to the rest of it later. But thank you again for checking us out. Without further ado, Here is our interview with John Mark McMillan.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
You just released Mercury and Lightning literally a year ago today that we're talking, September 1st, 2017.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. It was a year ago today. Yeah. That's amazing.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, well, thank you.
So it's an album that, for me, it's kind of an album about growing up and maturing. How was it for you making that album? I know it was an extended process for you, but how was it going through that? And even looking back a year from now, what that looks like.
Yeah, man, I don't know. That's a big question. Where do you want me to start?
I guess just kind of what was the process? Because I know it was an extended process making that record for you. But growing up and maturing, what kind of led to making these songs?
Oh, man. So I don't know that a thing led to making them. I'm constantly making songs, and so I think the songs just reflect, you know, where I am. In fact, a lot of times it's hard for me to figure out what's going on with me, you know. So songs are a way for me to kind of figure out what's actually happening. I'm not always so aware of what's going on or why I feel a certain way, or, you know. So really, it's more looking back at a song, I understand more of what it's about than I do when I'm writing it most of the time, you know. I have an idea, but it's not like a goal, like I'm trying to do something with this song or that song. It's more of just sort of, man, what's going on? How do I feel? What am I working through, you know? And so there's a lot going on growing up, having kids. And, so, you know, so a big part of it is pressure from life. Nothing other people don't go through, but it was just one of those seasons where I've got little kids and I've got a marriage. And I've got the, you know, technically speaking, I got multiple businesses that I got to keep up with, trying to write songs and tour, and then trying to write songs that people not just care about, but, you know, you run into people and they say things like, "Your song changed my life." I'm like, man, seriously, like, I got to do that again. And like this pressure to like change people's life through a song, which is a terrible pressure to put on somebody, you know. So you feeling all that and battling with some anxiety and having to learn what it means to grow up. And, you know, a lot of that means, you know, being healthy, eating healthy, sleeping, that kind of stuff that seems so boring, you know. But there's a lot to just living a healthy life that helps with things like anxiety, you know. So I was going through a lot of that kind of stuff, just realizing like, okay, like I've been living by the seat of my pants and it's time to like live life a little more intentionally. And also, you know, I grew up a certain way in a certain sort of faith tradition, and I'm at that point in my life where I'm like, okay, well, like, what do I really believe about all this stuff? Like, I've been told certain things. Like, do I just join the club because, you know, it's where I was born and who I am, you know? And so I started working through a lot of that stuff, which is not quick and easy or done, you know? And then there's the whole thing of like, well, like you're in kind of in a, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a worship leader, but, you know, I've written worship songs and people look to me, you know, sometimes for spiritual, I wouldn't say guidance, but, you know, people, you write a song that touches them and they think you got it figured out. So they want to hear what you have to say about these really important issues. And when I'm like, hey, I just don't know, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to say that. And a lot of times you feel like your career depends on you having the answers for people. And then all of a sudden you're like, well, you know what? I don't have the answers. So I can't just pretend that I do just to keep my job alive or my career happening, you know. And so I'm working through a lot of that kind of stuff. And so I'm in the middle of this sort of existential crisis. And I was telling my producer, Gabe, I was like, maybe we just need to wait till I'm on the other side of this, assuming there is another side. You know, like, wait till I'm on the other side of this, and then we'll do a record. And Gabe was like, you know, I think that's a bad idea. He's like, people want to hear honesty from you. He's like, maybe just make a record about what you're going through. And what if you just make the record about what's happening with you and not try and make the record you think people want from you? And I was like, no, that's a good idea. And so that's kind of how Mercury and Lightning happened. It's not the record I wanted to make for people. It's just the record that I had to make in the season of life I was in.
That's really good, because I know, like, especially with mental health and anxiety, that's just now something that a lot of people are beginning to unpack and getting comfortable talking with. So it's, I think that's awesome that you were able to do that and illustrate that through songs. How do you deal with that anxiety? And I know you kind of talked about living some things intentionally out, but what were some steps that you took to help overcome that? And obviously you probably still go through that a little bit today, but what were some steps that you had to take?
Sure. I think number one was awareness. I didn't realize I dealt with anxiety. I just freaked out at times. I thought, you know, like, I'm just mad, or, you know, life is difficult, or I didn't think much about it at all. But I didn't realize I dealt with anxiety, you know, and you feel like there's a weakness there. Like, I'm a tough dude, like, anxiety, I don't deal with anxiety. You know what I mean? Is there's denial, you know? And so I think the first part of it was just an awareness, like, okay, what's going on with me? You know, and I never used to do that. And I people don't teach you to do that, you know? And I went through some really amazing counseling, which, by the way, I think counseling is for everybody, not just people with problems. Or I should say everyone has problems, so counseling is for everybody, you know? But so I went through some counseling and realized, like, when something seems off, I never used to ask myself what's going on. I just used to push through it. You know, I never used to say, like, man, I feel this way, so what's going on? Oh, well, I haven't slept much in the last 4 days. Maybe I'm tired. Maybe the world isn't ending. Maybe I just haven't slept, you know? Or I'm really getting mad right now. Well, like, it's 4 p.m, I haven't had anything to eat all day. You know, that sounds so dumb, but it's like, it's actually a thing, you know? We're made of chemicals, and we're made of things, and if you don't take care of the thing you are, then, you know, things get weird. So I think that was a big part of it, was awareness. The other part of it is, some of it was kind of, was health. Like, I never used to exercise. You know, I thought exercise is for people who play sports and want to look good, and I wanted to look good, but I just didn't have time to look good, you know? It didn't seem in my life, so I didn't realize, like, oh, exercise is actually for your brain, and it's for your longevity, you know, and that, like, so something so simple, you know, it doesn't sound very profound, but eating better and exercising every day, like, made a big difference for me in my anxiety. I could think clearer about things. It doesn't eliminate the anxiety. I think the end was, I also came to terms with this idea that everything's going to be fine, you know, and that sounds like, you know, that sounds like a lie, because really bad things could happen. But the truth is, really bad things happen all the time, and people go through difficult things, and people find a way to be fine. You know, like, the worst thing could happen. I remember telling my dad in the middle of this anxiety breakdown, he's like, well, just tell me one thing you're afraid of. I said, well, I'm afraid I'm going to be out on the road, I'm going to die, and my kids are going to grow up without a dad, and they're going to be all messed up. And my dad said, oh, they'll be fine. You know? And so, and that sort of, like, broke something off of me. I was like, oh, you're right. Like, people can go through the worst things. And I think advertising, especially, creates anxiety in people. And people feel like you have to be messed up. If you go through certain things in your life, you have to be messed up forever. And there are things that can really, really mess you up. But, you know, a lot of people go through the worst things and are not messed up. You know, and they have to deal with things. I'm not saying it's easy. And I'm not saying they, you know, if you're messed up about something, that you're not okay. But I am saying, like, people, and maybe it takes years, but people get through stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think when I realized, like, hey, like, I think no matter what happens, everything's probably going to be okay, you know? And not spin my wheels thinking about what could go wrong, you know, or what's going to happen, or, you know, having anxiety about the unknown, you know? So, I don't know. We could have a long conversation about that. But for me, it was that. It was a combination of just realizing, hey, everything's going to be okay. And you know what? A lot of people may not know this, but, like, if you assume things are going to work out, things are much more likely to work out for you than if you assume they won't. And this is scientific, you know, like if you are convinced things are going to happen in your favor, then they're much more likely to actually happen in your favor than if you're afraid they won't. Now, it's no guarantee. It's not a guarantee again, but, you know, and so part of it was just like, hey, yeah, well, whatever happens, things will probably be fine. I need to take better care of myself. And you know what? If I approach life as though it's good and things are going to work out, there's the probability that they will work out is a lot higher than if I approach it as though things are not going to work out. So I don't know. Yeah.
that's a lot to unpack there. And like you said, that's something we could talk about for hours.
Totally.
People literally spend their whole lives studying that.
I know.
I know you talked about the way you were brought up, and I think you're a preacher's kid. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. Definitely.
Yeah. So what was that experience growing up for you? Because I knew different musicians have different stories. What was that upbringing like? Was it super strict? Were you allowed to kind of do your own thing? I mean, what was that like for you?
It didn't feel super strict. I mean, when I was really young, you know, my parents were worried about the kind of music I listened to and what movies I watch. But honestly, they were much more like my friends' parents, you know. They were cool with some things. And then, you know, at a certain age, you know, they're like, I don't know about rated R movies, you know. So they didn't feel strict, I don't think would be the word. They didn't seem strict. They, you know, they did have concerns about certain things. Maybe some of my friends didn't, but it never felt heavy handed, you know, really. I think my dad, he made sure to let people know that, you know, he was the pastor, but we are not the pastor's kids. And my wife is not the pastor's wife necessarily. Like, people shouldn't expect things from us just 'cause he's the pastor. And, you know, just to take, you know, he's like, they're going to be kids, and my wife is my wife, and my, you know, my mom, obviously. You know, so I'm sure there were times he was like, oh, man, I wish John Mark was not doing what he's doing. This is probably doesn't look good for me, but he wanted to give me as much freedom as he thought I could handle. You know, and he also has seen people with heavy-handed, you know, you can be so heavy-handed that your kids end up running in the complete opposite direction. He didn't want that to happen either. He wanted me to make my own choices. So it was, I don't know. So growing up a preacher's kid was not super hard for me. My dad was a lot of fun. My dad really believed in what he was doing. And I watched my dad. He felt like he was supposed to be in ministry. So I watched him quit a really successful job and go into ministry with no promise of any sort of income, and watched my parents struggle financially for a number of years while they started a church and a ministry, and they ended up in a good place. But, you know, I think I learned more about my dad, I think I'm a lot more like my dad in that way. You know, I've been mostly an independent musician. I've worked with labels occasionally, but for the most part, like, I fund all my records and I take all the risk when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I think I got that from my dad. I do think, you know, I also, because I've seen much more of the world in the past 15 years than in my whole life prior, you know, I met a lot of different kinds of people. So I grew up, you know, in Christianity, obviously, and in a sort of charismatic brand of Christianity. And after the years of traveling the world, you see, like, there are a lot of different types of people. I was like, what are the odds that we have it exactly right? You know, that just happened to be born into the exact perfect scenario. And so I came to the conclusion that, like, I can't just assume that, you know, I believe everything I believe because I was just born into it, because that doesn't make any sense. Is it true because I just happened to be born into it? Maybe. I mean, maybe I won the lottery. But then, it's sort of like, then what kind of God is that if only the people who are just are privileged to live in, you know, situations where people believe, you know, or, a certain way? Like, are those the only people that God cares about, you know? I mean, then you get into sort of Calvinism and predestination and all that, which You know, but
more hours and hours of conversation.
Yes, totally. And I always think I have friends who are Calvinists, so I'm not against Calvinists at all. But I do think that the predestination part of it is pretty funny. It's a lot of Calvinist friends I have are not, they don't like the universalists, and the universalists don't like the Calvinists. But what's really funny is they're both very similar in one way, in the sense that neither one of them have any control over where they're going to end
both
up.
Very stubborn.
You know? It's sort of like they kind of lap themselves and sort of end up in the same place. I'm sure they would just rip me to shreds over that comment. But, you know, I just figure there's got to be more to it.
Right. It's interesting the way, because I think a lot of people our age recently went through that deconstruction, reconstruction period. And I don't know what it was, if it was kind of the society that we live in, the political environment that surrounds us. For me, it's kind of seemed like when I had a kid, that's kind of when I started to view the world a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that was like for you. Like, what do you think kind of triggered that?
Man, I'm not sure. I've thought about it a lot, because you would think, well, having a kid is a good thing. But from a lot of my friends, when you ask them about sort of their sort of deconstruction moment, they would talk about some sort of really negative thing that happened to them. You know, but for me, it wasn't like that. Like, I mean, I've had hard times in my life, but there wasn't this moment where something bad happened and all of a sudden I questioned my faith. I think for me, it was the other way around. Like, I felt so blessed. I looked around at the world. It's like, why am I blessed and other people aren't blessed? Does God like me better? You know, like, why he answers my prayers, but he doesn't answer other people's prayers. You know, I remember as a kid thinking, like, it's really interesting that Santa Claus gives rich kids better presents than everybody else, you know, and that's, don't get me wrong, I don't think of God in the terms of Santa Claus, you know, but at the same time, there has to be more to it. And like, does God just love Americans better than everyone else because we have more? That's, I obviously don't believe that, you know. So I thought, there's just got to be more to this whole thing than I'm blessed and I live right, so God treats me good. You know, there's just more to it. It just didn't all just make sense. I think I started deconstructing slowly back in 2007. First of all, I love the Lord. I love Jesus. I believe in God. I believe in Jesus, you know. The way I believe in God, I think, is something that is interesting. It's interesting to me. It's like, what does that mean to have faith, to believe, you know? So that's another kind of conversation, is what exactly is the nature of faith. But, you know, I consider myself a believer. But in 2007, I played at this really huge event. It's like the biggest thing at the time I'd ever played at. And I don't know if I've played at something bigger in the sense that there were 30 or 40,000 people there, you know, like, it wasn't like a festival with multiple stages, like one stage, and I'm playing, and it's a big prayer thing, and they'd built up to this prayer thing being some sort of catalyst to change the nation. I remember thinking this was really important, and I did it, you know, and when I was done, I was like, I don't feel like anything happened. I was like, there's really amazing people, precious, sweet people, genuine, authentic people involved in this, you know, big prayer thing, you know, and they all are really kind to me. And that's what's funny, is like, the church people have always been pretty kind to me, you know. I just felt like, man, there's got to be more to this whole thing. I was like, then like a bunch of people, like then this sort of, you know, ritualistic thing, if enough people say the right word at the right time, all of a sudden God's going to do something. It just, that doesn't make sense to me. And so it started to unravel. I guess there was a negative thing that happened. The church I grew up in, that my dad was a part of, he became part of a much larger church organization when I was a teenager. And honestly, I wasn't interested in God until I was a teenager. But sort of the church I sort of like really sort of grew in the faith in, the two pastors there had a major fallout with one another. And I realized at that point, like, well, one of them is definitely wrong. Probably both of them are wrong at some point, You know, and sort of like the veil was lifted. And I was like, okay, like, they're just people, you know? And so, and likely not everything they said is 100% correct. I don't think they were liars or that they lied, but I was like, okay, these people are flawed like everyone else, you know? But I had taken their word like it was scripture, you know? Like, and so I think then it's like, well, I got to like reevaluate everything that I've learned, you know? But, and I think that's one thing that I don't know what the answer is, but about spiritual leaders, we sort of hold them up and lift them up. And when they fall, people want to cover it up or they want to hide it, you know? But I'm like, when you treat people like that, like, it's sort of like, especially for me when I was young or people who are young in the faith, you sort of think of them in a wrong way, like they're somehow different than you, you know, okay. But they're not at all different from you. Maybe older, maybe they've spent more time studying, or they have more experience, they're more mature than you, hopefully, at least they're more mature than you, but they're not really different than you, you know. They struggle to know God the way you do, you know. And so that might have been it for me, where it all started, and then it just sort of slowly wore on me. I think too, the other thing is, you know, when you're you don't have time to stop and think about things when you're in the rat race, you know, when you're just struggling to pay the bills, and when you're struggling to take care of your family, like there's not a whole lot of time to stop and think about the more important things, you know. Right. And I reached a point where things were going really, really well for me, and I realized, like, there's a lot of things I really need to reconsider. All of a sudden, like, paying the bills was not, like, you know, for many years, that's all I thought of, because we were doing this music thing independently, and there are times we struggled, you know, but even times we didn't struggle, like, there's always a fire to put out, you know.
Right.
Always something going wrong. You're always losing money somewhere and making money somewhere else, and just hopefully you're making more money than you're losing at some point. And I reached a point where I was like, that wasn't the thing that dominated my thought life anymore. And I started thinking about things that were more important. I mean, I guess taking care of your family and surviving is very, very important. But, right. You know, but then sort of like the whole point, the whole reason you want to take care of your family is so that you can think about things, bigger things, right? You know?
Yeah.
And once I got there, it's like, oh, man, I've got a lot to think about, you know?
It's easy to get stuck in those emotions.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So you mentioned this process started in 2007, and you just released this 10th anniversary of The Medicine, which came out in 2008.
Yep.
So a year later, you're releasing this record. How was it for you just recently going back, and you're doing this 10th anniversary thing, and you're going back and listening to these songs? So you're probably digging up old memories. You're thinking about how you viewed the world, how you viewed God at the time. How was that for you?
Well, it's really interesting, man. Like, I do think back in those days, I was more into singing theology, bringing theology, you know. And then there's a point where it's like, well, just talking about what does the theology mean when applied? What does it mean in sort of reality? You know, and so I see a lot of that, and, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, penal substitutionary atonement theory, you know, which is funny because it's such a big deal, but, like, it's such a huge term, you know? Like, what does it mean that Jesus died for you? What does that actually mean? What does it mean? You know, how is that applied? You know, and so I was singing a lot about resurrection, death and resurrection, and I don't sing so much about that now. I don't have a problem with it. We still do a lot of those songs, you know. But I just think I hadn't thought through everything back then, you know. I hadn't thought through what does it mean that Jesus died, that God died, you know. And there's really, I don't know, it's really interesting. You know, and I, you know, even things like hell, like I don't know that I ever really questioned hell back then, the concept of eternal conscious torment, You know, but I also was so busy and so in the culture, I don't know if they ever thought to think about whether or not the Bible really talks about eternal conscious torment, you know. And then here I'm looking back, it's like, I don't know that I ever really believed in hell that way, you know. But I never really thought about it, you know. And so I had to rethink a lot of those songs. Okay, well, what does this mean? You know, I still think they mean something, still think they're important. And don't get me wrong, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out. And, you know, I mean, if people really want to go to town theologically, like, you know, even the most fundamentalist person has got to agree with me when I say that, like, you don't get saved because you believe in hell. You know what I mean?
Right.
Even the most fundamentalist person knows you get saved because you believe in Jesus, not because you believe in hell. But we do talk a lot about hell in the United States. You know.
Yes, we do, especially nowadays.
I know. We do. We do. It's a really interesting concept. A really interesting idea, too. You know.
Especially when you're trying to talk to people that don't even believe that. So, like, believe in God and believe in all that. They, you know, how can you tell them that they're going to hell when that's something that they don't even believe, per se?
I know.
How is that love anyway?
Yeah, again, yeah. What sense? It's just, what sense does it make? Like, it just, to me, I could be wrong. I mean, totally. Tomorrow, a week from now, I could be like, yeah, man, God totally wants to burn everybody who doesn't.
Right.
You know, I mean, but it just doesn't make sense to me now. Especially reading through the Jesus. I spent a lot of time the last few years. Honestly, it got to the point where I've read the whole Bible. I got to the point over the last few years. I read mostly the Jesus stuff in Matthew 5, 6, and 7 was sort of the core of that, you know. And I really believe that people get, people misunderstand Christianity when the foundation of Christianity is either Paul or Judaism, you know. I realize it arose out of Judaism, you know. But if the Old Testament to me is not the foundation for understanding Jesus, Jesus is the foundation I want to think for understanding everything else, you know. And you know, and I realized that he wasn't that way for me. And so that's a big shift for me.
Also, kind of looking back, you know, obviously people know you for writing How He Loves. How was that, entering that kind of, I don't know if it was considered a CCM arena, but for you, kind of as an unknown songwriter at the time, especially someone that, even though he probably didn't know it at the time, was dealing with anxiety and reading kind of, I know there was a lot of criticism on that song. People had theological opinions about that song, especially that famous Sloppy Wet Kiss lyric. How was that, dealing with that and just kind of entering that head on, kind of, you know, as an unknown songwriter?
Well, what's funny is I was so not connected to CCM. Even I wrote that song, gosh, when was this? Probably 2003, 02, yeah, 03. So. And it really didn't become a thing until, like, I want to say 07, 08.
Right.
And maybe even really a big thing till 2009. So when I wrote that song, I knew nothing about, well, there wasn't a worship industry the way there is now.
Sure.
At all. So I knew nothing about that, obviously, because it didn't exist. And I knew nothing about CCM, you know, because I really didn't listen to Christian music. And I just had no idea. I was not in that world. So, like, when I signed my first record deal, that whole world was really interesting to me. I was totally knew nothing about it. I didn't know who any of the big songwriters were. Like, I had no idea who Chris Tomlin was. You know, I just had no idea whatsoever. So I didn't really know what to think. I guess I was pretty arrogant too, and I just assumed they wouldn't understand me. So it was no surprise. I was surprised that particular lyric got called out. I was like, that's funny. I thought, like, hurricanes are weirder than kisses, but, you know, that was the line that became the issue. So love's like a hurricane, or, you know, and I do think it's weird that Christians like to pick apart lyrics, you know. Because I don't think that lyrics matter really as much as we give them credit for. You know, it's sort of like if you love your mama and you do your best to tell your mama that you love her, your words are kind of important, but they don't matter that much. It's really what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. Maybe words shape theology, the way you think of the world. But I think we're giving ourselves a little too much credit if we think our songs are...
I'm just imagining Israelites picking apart the Psalms back in the day.
Exactly. And that's sort of my other thing. I was like, man, there's a lot going on there, you know. You know, and so for me, it's like, it's almost like in marriage, you know, the point is that you engage with one another. You know, so like, obviously, it's really bad for your marriage if you yell and fight all the time, you know. But sometimes what's worse than that is when you shut down and you don't discuss your disappointments and your regrets. Or hey, regret isn't even what I mean. But if you don't deal with your issues and you let them fester, you know. And so I think like worship is similar in that, like, I don't think that God cares how accurate our theology is in one sense when it comes to worship. I think he's more interested in, like, whether or not we engage, you know. And I think the funny thing is, I think the theology in a lot of times becomes an excuse not to engage. And, you know, and we argue over, like, was the sloppy wet or the unforeseen or, like, a kiss at all, you know. And we don't engage at all, you know. And then what we've done is we basically sort of, like, we've become like super righteous in our execution, but we forgot to actually be a part of the worship. You know, we just sort of picked it apart, you know?
Yeah.
To me, that goes back to this idea of faith that I'm wrestling with, is I'm sort of starting to believe that faith has less to do with like the facts that you subscribe to. You know, because the truth is you can subscribe to a lot of facts, but people don't live their life from facts. I mean, facts matter, right? But I've realized people don't live their life from facts. Like, every smoker knows that smoking causes cancer. Every single one of them knows. So they're not living life from facts. Like, I know I ate a whole pizza last night, and I knew while I was eating that pizza exactly what it was going to do to me today. You know, but I did not live my life from the facts last night when I ate that whole pizza. You know what I mean? And those things seem kind of extreme, but it's true. Like, people don't necessarily live from the facts. Like, they live from a posture, you know, a posture of life, you know. And so to me, like, faith is less about whether or not you adhere to fundamentalism or another sort of brand of Christianity. I think faith has more to do with like what you do with your physical self, you know, not meaning whether or not you go to the gym, but you know, your body is the platform for everything you do in the world. Right.
Sure.
And so, I mean, I guess talking is included and thinking is included because those happen inside your body or with your body. But for me, faith has more to do with showing up and less to do with having all the right answers, you know? And, yeah, so...
Faith without works is dead, so...
Totally. Well, yeah, totally. Exactly. Well, no, yeah, faith without works is dead. Like, exactly. You know, the action is the faith, right? Uh-huh. And the beautiful thing about that is that, to me, it's sort of like you almost can't deconstruct that, you know? Mm. It's like, because you have to live, you have to choose a way to live. Like, you don't really get to not choose a way to live, you know?
Right.
And so, like, I can go back and forth between like whatever I believe about, you know, is Genesis 1 literal or is it a parable, you know, was Jesus resurrected bodily, or you know, you can go back and forth with all of that stuff. At the end of the day, what really matters is whether or not you show up, you know, is whether or not you give yourself to the discipline, the Jesus discipline, you know.
It's like, do you believe that that you should take care of the poor, or are you actually doing something about it?
Exactly. Am I like destroying Twitter about how we don't take care of the poor, or am I like actually in my heart want to help the poor and do things for poor people? You know, like it's just sort of we get tricked into thinking talking about stuff is doing it, you know, and
yeah,
it's all people though. It's not just Christians. It's all people.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah. So if you went into your backyard and there was a time machine sitting there and you could go back to the day before you wrote How He Loves, what would you tell yourself?
Well, oh man, see, that's difficult.
Just from all the experiences that you've had since then, what would you tell yourself?
I'm not sure. You know, I don't know that I would tell myself anything. Because, I love everything I've come through, all the good and all the bad, is all part of what makes me who I am today. You know, I had a friend who's a preacher, and he had changed the way he thought about a lot of, you know, what he did. And I said, "Are you embarrassed when you hear those old messages?" He's like, "Nah, man, they're like baby pictures. That was me." He says, "No reason to deny who I was, because that's what made me who I am now." You know. So How He Loves is a great song. I mean, it when I hear it, it's like a 15-year-old song, 16-year-old song, you know. So it's a it's an angsty teenage song. You know, 16, 15, 16. It's like, you know, just getting his driver's license, I guess. But yeah, so I don't know. And that song opened up the new worlds for me, and I don't hate that song at all. You know, I do. You know, after 16 years, you get tired of it sometimes. And I don't feel, you know, I feel like our audience has grown with us too. I don't have to do that song every night. You know, people don't seem to mind. They like it sometimes when I do. Sometimes I'm like, you know, but I almost feel like we've done a lot of different things. And so people connect on a lot of different levels these days, not just on the level of that. And that, I'll say, that was what was hard early on. I will say this. This is what was difficult is, I didn't realize how big that song was going to be, and I didn't realize how much that song was going to define me and my career, you know, and it became such a big worship song. And if you listen to even those old records, like, there aren't that many sort of what you would call corporate worship songs on those records, you know. And so I think people misunderstood a little bit. They would come to our shows back in the day, and they thought they were going to get something different than they got, you know.
All right.
I think I would have told myself to, well, the other part of it was, I think I played into that for a while too, you know. I didn't feel like I had what it takes to make it with the other songs. I didn't feel like I could make it as an artist, that I had to lean on that. I was insecure, you know. Instead of just embracing all of it, you know, from the beginning, I should have embraced the worship and, I mean, it's all worship in a sense, but I should have embraced the worship and the other songs and had the confidence to work really, really hard and, you know, and not just depend on or feel like I was stuck in that world, you know. Because it took me a while before I had the confidence to just say, hey, I'm, you know, this is a part of who I am, but it's not who I am, you know.
Right. Yeah, so just kind of looking ahead before we wrap up, I know you've got a tour coming up.
Yep.
I know you're working on a Christmas record.
Yep.
Well, tell everybody about that.
Yes, so the tour starts on September 6th in Columbus, Ohio, and we're playing through September and October. We're going to be in the Midwest and on the East Coast and in Texas. We'll be in Chicago and New York and Dallas and a bunch of other days. We got Mike Maines in the Branches. We've got Tyson Motzenbacher. My wife, Sarah, is going to be singing on most of those shows, not all of them, but a good two-thirds. She'll be with us. And a couple of shows, Audrey Assad is going to be with us too. And so we're real excited about that. The Christmas record, we just wrapped it up. It just went to the vinyl pressing people to be pressed to vinyl. And we haven't officially announced it yet, but we should be announcing it this fall. It's called Smile in the Mystery. It's 7 songs, some original songs, some cover songs, and some songs that we took and did new things with. So I'm really excited about that.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much for your time. This was so much fun. I wish you the best of luck, and thank you so much for just pouring your heart out.
Yeah, thank you so much for talking with me, man. Thanks for letting a conflicted, flawed individual share his opinions with you.
It's all good, man. We're all conflicted in some way.
We are, but it's good, though. It's good.
That's right. God bless you, buddy.
Yeah, man, bless you.
That was our interview with Jean-Marc McMillan. I'd like to thank him so much for the time that he spent giving up his Saturday night to talk with us, and that was a really great conversation. We talked about a lot of things. We got into some deep theology there a little bit, but that was okay. You know, some of that might not be comfortable for all of you, and that's, you know, that's fine. You know, we were just, you know, kind of shooting the breeze, talking about some things that we grew up believing, and I don't know, a lot of people have questioned a lot of those traditional beliefs over the years, and then, you know, that was just a conversation about that, and that, you know, it's important to talk about those things with other Christians, and you know for me that just makes my faith stronger, because, you know, just practicing speaking about it is really important. And I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Like Jean-Marc McMillan said, he's got a Christmas record coming out in before the end of the year, and he's also got a tour that starts tomorrow night in Columbus with Mike Maines and the Branches. Tyson Motzenbacher and Audrey Assad will be on this tour. Again, that starts tomorrow, September 6th, if you're listening to the show and you don't know when the show is released. September 6th is when the tour will start. And if you wanted to find out the other dates, just check out johnmarkmcmillan.com/tour for more information. You can get all kinds of information about tickets and when he will be, hopefully, in your area. You can check that out. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. For those of you that haven't heard, we are on Spotify now. You just search Decent Christian Talk Podcast, and you can listen to some of the previous episodes that we have in the archives. You can find us online at decentchristiantalk.com. We post all our episodes on there, and you can also subscribe to us on the website as well as Spotify. If you give us your email address on our website, we send you an email every single time we post a podcast. If you don't already subscribe to us on Spotify or on iTunes, you can subscribe to us on the website. You can also give us a one-time donation through the website, through your PayPal account. That's decentchristiantalk.com. If you would rather not do the $1 a month Patreon pledge, there's an opportunity for you to do a one-time donation through the website. We're also on Twitter, DC Talk Act 2. We're also on Instagram, DC Talk Podcast, on Facebook, Decent Christian Talk, and on a Facebook group called the Decent Christian Talk Podcast. We are very excited about what the future holds. Thank you so much again for checking us out. We will catch you next time. Peace.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.